Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this week's episode of Dads on Wrestling. And yes, it is on wrestling because, as you can see behind me, we have a wrestling topic. I am joined, I am Jeff Meacham. If you're on Jeff Meacham Network and you know Jeff Meacham, you're too cool for the room. Go away. Joining me, as always, on the screen for Dads on Wrestling is the renegade himself, Jay Williams. And JJ, it's frightening to me that we're already in July and we're already, we're kind of pregnant, as Kevin Nash would say, about this gimmick, and that we're already, we've sucked you back in again, sir.
Yeah, definitely, I don't know how else to say it. I've said it on a couple of our shows. I've said it on the live stream. I just was looking for that creative outlet, and this presented itself to me with everything going on in the world. It's hard to keep your sanity when all you do is go from home to work to home to work to home to work. You need some kind of outlet. You can't go to the movies. You can't go to theme parks. You can't go to ball games. You can't do any of the stuff we talk about on our topics besides going home and watch TV. So
right.
When it was presented to me, I took the opportunity to have something to help keep my mind moving and stay creative so that I didn't just get sucked into whateverness.
A bit of nothingness. Yeah, exactly. And, much like the boys on this cup, you're for life. It's okay. You can admit it. It's all right. We love you for it. So today's show, as we know, is a wrestling show because every other week we're on a wrestling week. And we decided that since it's July and
July 3rd, we in no less, like today is the day before our Independence Day.
Because we in America, we celebrate American independence. And there's nothing more American in the WWE besides maybe a Derringer song in the 80s. Than the United States Heavyweight Championship. And exactly. Yeah. And I'm wearing red because, there's tie-ins for sure. But this championship, in a time where I was very WWF centric, I love the lineage of this championship, the history of this championship. And while I grew up on the WCW US title design that ended up becoming a representation of the Epic War Championship that I, led to the ring more than once. This title behind me, the late 80s, mid to late 80s U.S. Championship belt, I call it the Barry belt because Barry Windham held this when he was a horseman and just, horseman and all the gold. I just love the championship. And I figured, like you said, we're in July. It's the day before American Independence Day. We need to do our top 10 United States Heavyweight Champions. Now, this title goes back, if you go by official lineage, all the way to 1975 when Harley Race, it may have been Rio de Janeiro, so maybe, won a tournament to become the first U.S. champion. He beat Johnny Valentine, which...
He came to the ring.
Well, honestly, I think if we're going to put the fact you beat Johnny Valentine, it better be a real thing. So I think it may have actually happened. But I don't know. I wasn't there. I wasn't there. I wasn't booked. So, and all the way to the present day, because WWE via GM Stephanie McMahon resurrected it in 2003, 2 years after the demise of the Alliance. So this championship is currently the second oldest title in operation in WWE, and to this day, the only championship in WWE that did not originate in the World Wrestling Federation. So there you go. As we are a wrestling topic, you may start, sir.
All right. As we do every week, let us remind everybody that these top 10 lists are subjective. We are not stating that these are the best or the greatest. These are just our top 10 favorite United States champions. As someone who, as we say week in and week out, is not much on the current product, And basically grew up within the confines of the Attitude Era. You're only going to find one pre-Attitude Era champion on my list. Most of my choices are from the WWE version of the title.
Okay.
So, don't hate on me.
If it makes you feel any, right. If it makes you feel any better, every champion on my list, except for one, took place either when you were a fan or before either of us were a fan. So keep that in mind also. So you're not, you are not alone.
Okay. Good to know. Number 10, since we're talking about United States champions, since we're talking about our Independence Day tomorrow, America, the all-American American, Jack Swagger.
There you go.
Number 10 for me. I thought he did an amazing job hoisting that belt back up to prestige. I felt like he had a good run with it. And much like a person that's going to appear closer to the top of my list, when you think of America and the U.S. title, you think of the all-American American, Jack Swagger.
And I dare say that that championship reign was his redemption from what should have been a much better world title reign.
Very much so. Number 9 is the only pre-me starting watching resident of my list. And it's a man who appeared on my should have been world champions list. It's a man who I honestly cannot stop talking about enough when it comes to singing his praises. Tully Blanchard.
Oh, yeah.
Enough said. You know, you go watch the matches that that man put on, defending the title, winning the title, in other matches. Tully Blanchard, phenomenal United States champion. Even though he only had, I believe, one run with that title, he was more of a TV champion than a U.S. champion. Yes. It just showed how good he really was that they elevated him up to that for even that one run. It's the equivalent of going from European to IC.
Agreed. Do yourselves a solid, kids. Go chain them for the U.S. title at Starrcade. I forget what year. Just find it. Do a little work.
Research. It is your friend. You ain't got nothing better to do these days. Do some homework.
I mean, hell, you're watching us. Seriously.
Yeah. It just shows you don't have anything better to do.
Exactly. Yeah.
Number 8, Dolph Ziggler.
There you go. Okay.
Another man who I felt really did his best to elevate the championship, to take it to new heights, fighting champion. Whether he was a heel or babyface with the belt, let's be real, that man stole the show. Right. Much in the vein of Shawn Michaels in the 90s, every time he came through that curtain, eyes were on Dolph. And more often than not, he gave you the match of the night.
He did indeed.
Number 7 on my list comes from the WCW,
if you will,
Lance Storm. And
go ahead.
I'm waiting for it to pop up. The stuff that Lance did with this title was just money. Lance was already, there you go, you see Lance with the Hardcore Championship and the United States Championship, along with a very slender Jeff and his friends.
Yes.
Lance just took an opportunity and turned chicken shit into chicken salad. because he slapped a Canada sticker on that. He made it the Canadian Heavyweight Championship or whatever it was he called it, whatever gimmicky name he had for it. He won the Cruiserweight Championship at the same time, not pictured in that image. Slapped a Canada sticker over it, gimmicked it to the whatever it was, Kilos and Under Championship.
100 Kilos Under Championship, but the best one's the Hardcore title.
And then the Hardcore title. And he just, coming off of the heels of ECW, where he was only ever going to really be a tag team champion with Just Incredible, the Impact Players, WCW did something right with Lance Storm. They saw his ability, put it all into his hands, and goddamn if he was not successful running with those straps. It makes me wonder why Vince couldn't do it when he came to the E. He went from being, pun intended, an impact player in ECW to being even more impactful, at least for a while, in WCW, to coming all the way down here in WWE.
And a small bit of trivia, he was the first WCW star to kick off the invasion. There was money there, and instead they jobbed ENC at the invasion.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a damn shame.
It is. And
where WCW did something right and Vince McMahon failed.
Yep. The reason the Cruiserweight title is not in that picture you saw, and by the way, those of you guys that aren't aware of the surroundings there, there's a reason there's a Nitro Grill label on my sleeve. That is in Las Vegas at the Nitro Grill that used to be housed in the Excalibur on the upper floor, which, you know, if you weren't a wrestling fan, you had no idea it was there. You just stumbled into that place. Expensive as hell. Food was meh. You know, they ended up stealing a lot of the guy's gear. Like, you know, Flair lost, I think, 2 or 3 robes out of that place. You know, so it wasn't the greatest environment, but I got my only WCW Hulkster shirt at that place. Hence, updated a WCW logo there on the Hulkster logo. And I met Lance Storm and Mike Awesome there the same day. Another former U.S. champion at one time. So there was that. But the reason the Cruiserweight title is not there is because he won those two championships in the course of a week on Nitro and Thunder, I believe. And then my Vegas trip was that weekend. And then Monday on Nitro, he won the other title. So, you know.
Okay, so he just hadn't gotten it yet.
Right.
Okay.
So there you go. And that is today the only champion that was sitting, the actual sitting, defending, reigning U.S. champion that I've met. That's why I wanted to include that picture in the show today. So there you go.
Absolutely. Number 6 on my list is a good buddy of ours, Daniel Bryan.
Ah, yes.
Everything that he has done in the company, the phenomenal rise, if you will, of Daniel Bryan can really, in my opinion, be traced back to that championship. Him winning that belt began the ascension, if you will, of Daniel Bryan. At least in my opinion.
And, you know, credit to The Miz. So, you know, the feud with Miz and Bryan getting the belt from The Miz helped Bryan.
Well, you just said his name twice in the span of one sentence. Would you like to go and say it a third time for my number 5?
Well, because he is so awesome, why not? You know? Yeah.
Just what you said. The Miz was a great champion. The Miz is one of those guys that WWE fans seriously slept on for years. It only seems now like he's starting to get his due from fans.
Yep.
But I remember sitting there in the Casa when he was the in-ring host of SmackDown and just being captivated by Mike Mizanin.
Yep.
He should have won Tough Enough. Hands down. Pewter was a mistake.
Right.
Yes. Time has proven that.
Yeah.
I mean, one of those mans barely lasted a year. One of those mans became WWE champion headlining WrestleMania.
Well, but, you know, it's kind of hard to move when you got Hardcore Holly's fist through your face.
Still. But The Miz is one of those guys who was a sleeper performer that fans don't give enough credit to. And yep. His U.S. champion definitely helped with that.
Yes. Both Bryan and Miz are on my honorable mention list for the record. So,
number four for me is the last appearance of a non-WWE superstar when they won the title, at least.
Okay.
Bill Goldberg.
Okay.
Say what you will about Goldberg, but him beating Raven for that title helped elevate him even further into the push that would eventually see him dethrone Hogan.
Agreed.
It added steam. When people may have started to be getting tired of seeing him come out week in and week out and just decimate opponents and have nothing to show for it, putting that strap around his waist just gave a little bit more into the match going in. Now he's a defending champion, and he's still plowing through everybody. What's finally going to stop him, which we all know now was Scott Hall and a taser, but just look at the run he had for all those matches undefeated. And he never lost the U.S. title. He surrendered it after he defeated Hogan.
It's true.
So he's also one of the few United States champions to never be beaten. And let's add a footnote, not have to surrender due to injury.
Right. Plenty of those over the years.
Number three on my list, I kind of teased a little bit when I was talking about Jack Swagger. When you think America and you think the U.S. championship, although you don't really associate this guy with the U.S. title, but you think America, you think Kurt Angle. And Kurt Angle won it at a time when he did not need that fucking championship.
No.
He had already pretty much held everything, save for a tag title, which came in 2002.
Yes.
He had pretty much already held everything major. Intercontinental, European, Hardcore, WWF Championship. I think he had even already had the WCW title for a cup of coffee. And then he gets the U.S. title too. He didn't need it. But when you look back in the history books at champions and you see Kurt Angle, even if it was for a cup of coffee, you know that a respected wrestler held that belt.
And honestly, him beating Rhino and then dropping it to Edge was a great means to an end to get Edge and Test in the ring at Survivor Series for the unification match. So Kurt's reign, while brief and while like, why? That was why. So.
And let's not forget, you know, King of the Ring, Kurt made Edge look like $1 million.
Yes.
Same thing happened when he put that strap on him. Kurt made Edge look that much better to where Edge could begin his ascension to what would eventually become the rated R superstar, the ultimate opportunist, and the multi-time world champion that we know today.
Yeah, people...
Had he not had those matches with Kurt, he may not have ever been taken as seriously.
Yeah, people tend to sleep on Kurt versus Edge, but that whole... started, you know, in 2001, friendly rivalry, and led into the shenanigans in 2002, you know, that really put, you know, had Edge not gotten hurt at the end of 02 going into 03, it may have gone even further as far as establishing Edge instead of, you know, them getting all momentum and then boom, he has to leave for a year. So, you know, Edge and Kurt is a great little story that it doesn't get told enough, I don't think.
Agreed. Number two will probably surprise you for coming out of my mouth, considering I'm not a guy who usually sings his praises.
Oh, well, he belongs on this list for sure. Yeah, it actually doesn't surprise me one bit.
But, you know, it's cool to hate on Cena.
It is.
It's been the cool trend for at least the past 10 to 15 years.
Yep.
To hate on Cena. And I was one of the first to really start digging into him. You remember?
Oh, I remember.
I was smiling in that picture of us with him. But we all know how much I really didn't like the wrestler of John Cena when we took that picture.
Yep.
Now, let me just state, before I go any further, I have never, ever had a problem with John Cena, the man.
Right.
The guy that's out there is the face of the company doing all the Make-A-Wish stuff that he does. I mean, I'm sure you guys saw floating around social media a few months ago through all this coronavirus, the Make-A-Wish that he did. He's sitting there with his mask on, gloves on, and he's still giving this kid like a huge hug, fulfilling a Make-A-Wish for a potentially dying kid through all of this. Kid is masked and gloved. You cannot talk shit about that guy. But from the minute his music drops till he goes back through that curtain, that guy I always talk massive crap about.
He bugs.
Yeah. But yeah. When he was the United States champion, his work was still phenomenal. There was not a bad thing that I could say about that run. I believe he's held it a few more times here in recent years, but I'm specifically speaking about that first run when he defeated Big Show at Mania 20 and then lost it to Orlando Jordan going into his fight with JBL.
Right. Yeah, because he...
Specifically speaking about that run as champion.
Yeah, he brought it... He got it back a few times, and, you know, he started his John Cena Open Challenge in the later years. That's how Sammy came to the main roster. That's how Owens came to the main roster. Those type of things with John Cena as the United States champion. But his... So
basically doing what Kurt had done when he debuted.
Right. So basically his, whatever it was, first two or three runs when he was the I Have the Spinner Belt U.S. champion. Again, like you said, phenomenal work. No question about it.
Number one for me, and I seriously debated about putting Cena at number one, which that might have surprised you. But number one for me is when I close my eyes and I remember and I think about United States champions during the time that I watched, the first one that pops into my head. Again, subjective. Not saying the greatest, not saying the best, but the first person that pops in my head when I think of the United States Championship in the WWE era, Montel Vontavious Porter.
Yep.
MVP was a phenomenal United States champion.
Almost a full year in the first reign.
Yeah.
And again, it's unfortunately lost to tragic occurrences in history. But, you know, the fact is, he beat Benoit and then Iron Fist over it. So, you know, Benoit, yes, beating Benoit in 07, yeah, it don't age well, right? But, you know, beating Chris Benoit for the U.S. Championship in any era is big. And MVP did it. And he reigned for a year, so...
Although if you watch the network, then much like SummerSlam 04, where Randy Orton just walks into the ring, finds the World Heavyweight Championship, and walks out with it, It's the same thing with MVP. He just walks down to the ring that night. Oh, the U.S. title's laying there. Okay, I'm the champ now. Bye.
Sounds good to me. So, good choices. Love the choices. Love the honesty that it's only Attitude Era post. That's well said, and I'm going to make myself look super duper older than I am, because
no worries.
There's guys on here that
you are the West Coast professor. You are the historian right. of the channel. This is the Jeff Meacham Network.
Right. There's also There's also, keep in mind, there's also two guys on here that two and a half. There's two guys on here I didn't actually see defend the championship as it was happening, right? I've seen it in post, and it's awesome. The other champion that's on my list is actually close to the top of the list, was a U.S. champion during the Monday Night Wars, but his most prevalent U.S. title reigns came much, much earlier in his career, prior to him becoming who he is now, or who is like his ultimate legacy. So, anyway, number 10 is a tie for me, and that's shit way to go, and I really don't care. It's my list, so... Nikita Koloff and Magnum TA. These two guys waged war over the title. They were coming to a head. It was going to be the ultimate grudge match based on that championship alone and other things also. And then Magnum got hurt. And Nikita dedicated his reign to Magnum. It was a beautiful moment in history, but both of these guys were tremendous United States champions in the Crockett era, at a time where the U.S. champion didn't have to be quite as big a workhorse, because you got Ric frickin' Flair carrying the world title. So, you had to be a double workhorse, because you gotta try to, make sure you do right, because otherwise the champ's gonna come after you and just, make your match look like shit. So, you got to make sure you're good. Nikita did great, as did Magnum. Both tremendous workers. Number 9 is, to date, the longest reigning WWE-based United States champion, Dean Ambrose. Dean Ambrose surpassed MVP's reign, which is, I'm surprised myself he's lower on the list than he is, but I don't think of Dean in the U.S. championship vein, other than the fact that he was the dominant single member of the Shield during his, all three Shield members had titles, but the Rollins and Reigns lost the tag titles relatively quickly. Ambrose moved on and on and on. He kept on moving, and he was a great U.S. champion, and only lost it because of Battle Royal BS the GM put down when Sheamus became the champion. So there's that. Number 8, they call him the Natural, Dustin Rhodes. When I started watching WCW full on in the early 90s, and even not as full on as I did come June 94, Dustin was a awesome U.S. champion. He was not quite into the groove he's even in now. I mean, Dustin, I think, is better now than he's been in many, many years, but the Natural Dustin Rhodes was a awesome, awesome personality on television. His dad was also a great U.S. champion. He's not on my list, but he was a great U.S. champion. So there's definitely the Rhodes legacy of the U.S. title. And if you really want to get nitpicky, Cody was also the New Japan IWGP U.S. champion. So that branded championship is Rhodes heavy, if you will, baby. Love it. Now, number 7 is only number 7 because he is a WWE U.S. champion, and I dare say the second greatest WWE U.S. champion, MVP. Now, I know he was way up there on your list. You said why. There are a dozen reasons why MVP could be higher, but MVP is just a undersold, underappreciated, undervalued WWE superstar, and his run with the U.S. championship, especially with what happened to him, the man he took it from less than a month after he beat this man, MVP could have, I mean, let's be honest, the business could have folded on in on of itself, let alone the U.S. Championship, because of the lineage now being completely shattered by the fact that the most recent champion did what he did. MVP said, I got this, and ran like a sprinter in the Olympics and was an awesome U.S. champion. And he won it back a couple times after that, so he's resilient too. Love it.
And let me just number also six. Drop in, let me just also drop in real quick, and I should have mentioned this when I was talking about him. While he was champion, I hated the fact that he was champion.
Right?
I kept wanting him to lose it so bad.
Yep.
It's not until hindsight, when you remove yourself and you go back and you rewatch stuff, that you can appreciate what they were really doing. And that's when I really started to appreciate his runs as champion.
Regardless of what Paul Heyman said in the Hammerstein Ballroom, would you compare MVP's first U.S. title reign, as far as the fans wanting it to just freaking end already, to JBL's WWE Championship reign? Because if you look back, John being the champion, yes, he was a necessary evil. Right? Because, you know, there was no top heel on SmackDown because Kurt was hurt and Brock was gone and the Big Show was. What's that?
And Triple H didn't want to work Tuesdays.
I was trying to be an asshole, but yeah, okay. And if we're being honest, Triple H was ruling the roost on Raw. He and Evolution were still cooking with gas even when JBL became the champion. It wasn't until SummerSlam that Evolution's wheels started to fall off the track. So, you know, there was nobody there. And people for 10 months just were screaming for Bradshaw's head. But when you look back, it's like, without Bradshaw, there was no Rise of John Cena. There is no face that runs the place for the next decade and a half. So, respect it, folks.
Agreed. I can definitely concede that because, again, at the time, you just want Bradshaw to lose that belt to whoever he's fighting.
Yeah.
And he kept holding it and kept holding it and kept holding it. It's like, oh, my God, this guy is not even that good.
Right.
It's like, no disrespect to John Bradshaw Layfield, JBL. If you look at the list that we did of people that never held the title, and compare them to his 10-month reign. What the flying fuck?
Yeah. That reminds me of a great story. When David Arquette became champion and he was told he was going to be champion, he looked over to his side at Booker T and said, Book, how many times have you been world champion? I never won it yet, David. And David's like, oh, hell. Like, yeah, Roddy Piper, Scott Hall, all 20 guys, or we had some same, but you know, figure a list of 20, and John Bradshaw Layfield raised for 10 months. But it's like when you look back again,
but Owen we wanted 3 days between Brett to Diesel,
right? Yeah, exactly. Thank you. But when you look back, we wanted somebody to beat him so bad that. He's not a mediocre worker, but somebody with only 5 moves of doom beating him was enough for us. That's how bad we wanted Bradshaw to lose. Coincidence or genius booking?
Too sure.
So there you go. MVP, the same thing. When Matt Hardy beat him, it was like, yes! And it's like, huh. Would we really have cared if Matt Hardy won a championship in 2008?
I would have, because I was still a big Hardy fan back then. But
well, I know you and the Enterprise were.
Public?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, granted, you and the Enterprise were on the Hardy team. I'm not going to take that away from you whatsoever, because the Hardys were great. So there you go. Number six for me is the gentleman who I associate most with the belt behind us, the NWA Crockett era U.S. Championship. I mentioned him earlier. Barry Windham. Barry could have very easily fallen into the background when he turned on Lex Luger and helps Arn and Tully regain the tag team championships after the Clash of Champions that year. And instead, when Dusty was stripped of the championship, Barry stepped up and completed the quartet. Because Flair was champion, Arn and Tully were champions, and now Barry was champion. And the Horsemen, the reason the, I'm going to make a bold statement, I don't care who likes it, the reason that group of the Horsemen is in the WWE Hall of Fame as that group is because Barry winning this championship. Because without Barry as U.S. champion, they're not all champions. And not at any time did all of the Horsemen have individual championships at the same time. Granted, you had Flair as a world champion pretty much from 1985 till, let's see, it's 2020, so 2 days ago. You had usually Arn and Ole or Arn and Tully as tag champions, but more often than not, one of them did not have a championship in the particular moment. These guys did.
So you're telling me, you're telling me for certainty here, because I'm not going to Google to fact check you, and we don't have Stat Boy on standby here for all right. those watching.
Right.
You're sure there was never a moment prior to this where Flair was world champ, Arn and Ole were tag champs, and Tully had the TV belt or whatever?
I'm 99% sure that when Tully was TV or national or U.S., Arn was TV, but he and Ole weren't the national tag team champions. I could be wrong on that, and I will go back and research that. And when this show goes up on July 3rd, if we do a post show or whatever, or I do a little thing afterwards, I will say, hey, here's the evidence right here, folks. So I'm pretty sure I have this image in my head right now of Tully with a national TV, national belt crooked here, and Arn with a TV belt crooked here, and Ole, you know, feeling naked on the air. That's the image I have. So not sure, but 99% sure. Number five is a gentleman who is easy to skate around because of what happened in June of 2007, but Chris Benoit as the U.S. champion really got that champ over in the WWE. Think about it. Who was in the finals of the U.S. title tournament in 2003? Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit. So right there, without Benoit, there's no championship history in WWE. That's enough there. He and Booker series for the title in 2003 and 2004, whatever it was. Yeah, 2003. Great stuff. No, I'm sorry. 2005, 2006. There we go. That's what I was trying to say. And only ended up being a little bit clustery because of Booker's injury, but Orton and Benoit had a great series at the end of that series. So there's that. You know, and he, to his credit, put Bradshaw over at WrestleMania when, you know, Bradshaw's biggest thing then was having a manager with a freaking growth on her face. But Benoit was one of those utility U.S. champions. Like, if you need somebody to go out there and have a, you know, a match with Mike Meltzer, you know, twinkle in his trousers, put the belt on Benoit.
Yeah.
So there you go. Number four is the last WWE-based U.S. champion on my list.
Okay.
And I'm sorry there's no picture, but you know what? You can't see him anyway, so it's okay. John Cena. If there's anybody who's not the face of the WWE U.S. Championship besides John Cena, you know, he's been that guy. You know, and not only was he that guy and made the championship cool with the spinner, when he won it back all those years later and had the open challenge and, hey, you know, brought all these guys up and, you know, really had amazing matches in a time of his career where he didn't need amazing matches. He was already, you know, he was the franchise. You know, he made himself the franchise in 2003 and 2004, 2005. He established his legacy with the U.S. Championship again a decade later. So, great U.S. champion. Number three, won the championship primarily in the late 70s, early 80s, prior to him becoming a, you know, a 16-time, if you go by WWE, world champion. But, and then he won it back in the summer of 96 at the same event where the world changed. It became a new world, if you will. But on the card, you had Flair defeating Conan for the U.S. Championship. And only lost it because he separated his shoulder, I think, or rotator cuff, whatever it was, and an NWO beatdown took the belt away from him. So Ric Flair is a understated U.S. champion. And, you know, props to the Nature Boy for being brave enough to be one of the few guys that carried the U.S. Championship at a time where it looked like a preschool project made that championship belt. Now, granted, it's the current national championship representation in NWA, so I'm not faulting Billy and Dave Lagana for their tie to history, but that belt is fugly. So props to Nate and Roddy and Jimmy Snuck and all those guys for wearing that belt, dude. Number two is the first U.S. champion I ever saw. The total package. And there, to this day, I will never forget as long as I live, there is an image of Lex shortly after he won the world title from Barry Windham. Not from Barry Windham. He won it by beating Barry after the demise of Ric Flair in WCW. And again, JJ was watching the Clash of the Champions recently to get ready for another show we're doing. Great American Bash. Sorry. You know, so JJ saw firsthand how lively that crowd was when Lex became the world champion because Flair was not there. So at a time where Lex could have whimpered away into obscurity, he won the world title. And there's a picture backstage of Lex with the U.S. championship and that piecemeal world championship they had made out of the Western Heritage Championship from Dusty. And it's an iconic image for me. That when I think of the U.S. Championship in the early time of my fandom, I think of Lex Luger. And that's why he's number two. The only reason he's not number one is because somebody jumped from WWF to WCW in 1991 and after beating Sting for the U.S. title, made the championship simply ravishing. Rick Rude was the WCW U.S. champion. That you know, he was in charge, the leader of the Dangerous Alliance as U.S. champion. He had the title for an entire calendar year. He won it in November of 91. He had to vacate it in January of 93 due to a back injury. He had the championship for all of 1992. And at a time where the world title was dominated by Lex, Sting, and Vader, and Ron Simmons briefly, you know, much like the IC championship was, the U.S. title became the showpiece of the workhorse. And ravishing Rick Rude, for all his, you know, he's on steroids or he's just, dude, that guy made me believe. I wanted him, I wanted his head on a platter or on a pole in my front yard as a trophy. I hated that son of a bitch with a passion. And I look back and I go, that's what I was supposed to be doing. And as great as his WWF run was, I came along, he was already gone. So I didn't see Rick until he became the Halloween Phantom and Halloween Havoc and then unmasked. Oh, it's Rick Rude. Okay. He, as great as Paul Heyman is, and I will forever sing Paul's praises, were it not for Rick Rude jumping the ship and Rick Rude going, come here, Paul. Come here, Deuce. There's no DA. There's no Stunning Steve Ascension. There's no Bobby Eaton second chance relevancy. There's no keep Arn Anderson in the mix as a part of a group. There's no Larry Zbysko becoming a thing in WCW. So it's all because of Rick Rude. And, you know, he, in my opinion, is the greatest United States heavyweight champion of all time.
Fair enough. Hard to argue you on your list, especially with your knowledge.
It's, you know, and again, you know, it's, if I remember our chronology correctly, in two shows from now, we're going to do our Great American Bash list. And, right. you know, so we've already seen exactly what the Bash can do to a person, like I said, with Lex. But, you know, this championship and the Great American Bash are so much what July in wrestling is all about, right? And I just can't wait for the middle part of the month, because we've also got baseball movies coming up in 2 weeks. And I love me a game of baseball. I know you're not big on baseball. You were more so as a kid, I'm sure. But, you know, baseball been very good to me. So I can't wait for that show in 2 weeks. Can't wait for the Great American Bash in 4 weeks. July, I forgot, July's a long month. So we got three shows this month. I love it. Yeah. So, and of course, you know, lest we forget, lest we not put over another champion, you know, Wrestling Trivia Challenge is still cooking. We're still doing our damn thing each and every other Friday. It's just, it's a great, great outlet for our fans and our competitors to really showcase their knowledge. And, you know, thank God I got Statboy, the Eye in the Sky, because, you know, I suck. I can't count, as we know.
There's a t-shirt about it.
The shirt. Is it still here? Oh, it's not here anymore. But you can check out my shirts at teespring.com/stores/Jeff-Meacham-Network. There's more shirts on there than there are on this image. It's an old image, and I've been busy to replace it. So there you go. But there you go. And where can we find you on social media, sir?
You can find me on Instagram at the Renegade JJ Williams. If you would like, I try to keep the people I follow very closed within on this page because it's more of a business page. But if you would like to earn a follow from myself and Jeff, we've been discussing this a little bit, you know, throw us an idea, a suggestion for a topic. It can be wrestling or non-wrestling. We prefer some non-wrestling ones right now because we've pretty much kind of figured what our wrestling topics will be for the rest of the year. But throw us a topic that you'd like us to talk about. And if we use it, we will shoot you a follow back. Kind of a little game here to try and get you guys to interact a little bit more. You know, we're not getting too many suggestions yet because we're still in the infancy of the relaunch here of the Dads, Not Always on Wrestling. But please shoot out a suggestion to me at the Renegade JJ Williams on Instagram, or at _ Jeff Meacham, or the Jeff Meacham Network. And if we use it, we'll shoot you a follow back.
As a tie into next show, if you send it, we will use. So there you go.
Good plug.
There you go. And as we tape this, it's well, we're well a month or more than a month before this goes up. But I just got a message from a certain Statboy that somebody bought a Statboy shirt. So let me throw that up there. If you haven't seen it yet, there it is, folks. That message to me is hashtag Statboy approved. So there you go. And you mentioned the counting shirt. There's that thing. There we go. There it is. Firefly Funhouse. Inspired, but Sesame Street defined. So, yeah. One screw up, two screw ups, you're fired. So,
yeah. And those, of course, can be found at teespring.com, the Greg Cherry brand, correct?
/store/ Greg Cherry brand. And you can also find the Henderson Hottie shirt. I'm not putting that one up there because I just don't have it right here in front of me. That's poor planning on my part, my bad. But it's definitely worth a look. And follow her on Instagram also. I'll throw it up there in the comments later. But yeah, so she wants followers, and trust me, if you follow her, you will enjoy following the Henderson Hottie. So
I got it right here. It's on Instagram. It's Miss MISS_ Vixen VIXEN 420. That's the Henderson Hotties Instagram.
And that's pretty much, that's her in a nutshell. Vixen 420. That's, there you go. So, for the Renegade JJ Williams, I am the West Coast Wrestler Jeff Meacham, saying we will see you guys in 2 weeks on the Dads, not always on wrestling.